The Archetypal Tarot Podcast explores universal human patterns, called archetypes, by investigating the major arcana of the ancient tarot. We recognize these archetypes because they are present in our own life stories, myths, and culture. Each card represents a stage of the journey for understanding the greater story of our lives.
Welcome to the Archetypal Tarot Podcast. I'm Julianne Javeau, a consultant who specializes in archetypal patterns, and my co-host, Sundara Quackenbush, is a tarot consultant, among many other fabulous things. And today we are delving into card number 10 of the major arcana of the tarot, and that is the Wheel of Fortune. And as always, we are taking these cards and looking at giving them a fresh modern look, something beyond superstition, which is going to be important for today's card, and just looking at them as a part of our lives. These are memes and myths that we can look at, see in our lives, and hopefully make use of these stories and patterns and to improve our lives, to see kind of where we are, and hopefully get a little bit of depth, knowledge, and fun, which might be happening today as well.
So, the Wheel of Fortune!
Yes, we're both Vanna White today. If only you could see us. Both of us are in these fabulous gowns, turning the letters over. Anyway.
Oh, I know. I'm in my wedding dress size right now. It's amazing. Incredible.
Oh, I look incredible. You already told me that today. You look great. And this is a perfect example of the Wheel of Fortune card, right? You can't plan this stuff. It is about the turning of that wheel. So why don't you describe what's on these incredibly detailed and I think somewhat arcane cards? It's kind of confusing, so.
Yeah, there is a lot of symbolism going on in the classic Wheel of Fortune cards. We'll take a look at the good old Marseilles deck here, and we see a wheel here with six spokes, and we have an ascending creature on the right, to the reader, card reader's right. Looks like a dog or a monkey ascending this wheel. And then at the very top, we have the Sphinx guarding up there with a little sword and crown, making sure none of us transcend the wheel. And then going down to the left side, heading on its way down, with trepidation perhaps, is another monkey-like figure. And so we really see essentially the wheel of life here, right? We see often what I'm sure all of us feel. We feel like sometimes we're on the up and up, things are going well, we're getting to the top, we're at the top, and then other moments when it feels like we're descending and having to have a whole new reanalysis. In the Rider-Waite deck, we've got a very similar theme. We've got that Sphinx at the top with the sword, a rising Anubis figure on the right. Descending, we have the snake, which seems like a very apt symbol for a descent, or a really nice way to see a descent, which is, you know, a need to change skins. What often Julianne and I find is that these cards, our own lives will mirror perhaps something, and I'm coming up on this week of my birthday entering into, I feel, the Saturn return time. So I feel a very Saturn return-like quality in these cards. That's what it's meaning for me at the moment. Or any, for our readers, any period of time where you're sensing a big change, a big transition, a turning of the wheel, some new life being injected into maybe something that felt dull and lifeless, that things are having to change. But it's often seen as a very fortunate card to have come up in the tarot. So that's good to know.
There's a lot happening in this card. See, now I'm a deeply pragmatic person, and I come at the tarot as just being stories. I think superstition is something that can be really troublesome for a lot of people, to sort of put an idea into something and put so much power into something that they're that they're handing it away. And so, like, when I look, when I've previously, before we delved into this and, you know, before I was actually working as a professional or looking at archetypes, I would see this card and be like, ugh, like, there's a lot happening here. And there's, there's glyphs on it. There's, there are Hebrew letters. In some of them, they've got alchemical details. There's just, this just really seems to be rich in a lot of things and kind of scary, but also sort of like, what's happening? There's clouds and there's this wheel. And I think it's fun to kind of take a look at this from the, from our everyday level of, yeah, there are going to be those times when we are just, you know, on the top of that wheel and going, and it's as if nothing can go wrong. You know, that, those days where you're just able to like move along with things, stuff starts coming at you. And then there's, you know, the kind of bottom of that wheel, the other part of that cycle where things are being sort of taken away from you instead of given to you. And what do you do with that? And I think both, one feels good, the other one not so good, but seeing as both as being really, really important. And a lot of people look at this card as karma, you know, what comes around goes around. So we have a lot to delve into, and we'll talk a little bit about the gambler maybe later, but Sundara, you had a couple of things that you'd picked up on with the Wheel of Fortune and about experience and existence and moving on, the number 10. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, we should touch on the symbolism of this significant number of 10. So this is the first time we see a double-digit number in our tarot journey. So this is, of course, with numerology and so forth, this is very significant and must be noted that there's a sense of completion here. Whenever a 10 comes up in the tarot, whether it's in the minor arcana or major, that there is something has completed itself and come into its a certain wholeness in this stage. It's also signaling a new phase, a new epic of awareness. So that's great to keep in mind with this card. And so it also points to why this is also a wonderful card to see pop up in your spread. Is you can ask yourself and give yourself a little pat on the back about what has come to completion for you and what has been a job well done, or what have been the lessons learned. And touching a bit on what this means for our hero, our hero's journey, he's come from, you know, he's just come from taking a little time out with the hermit, having a chance after maybe some of those sobering realities and objectivities presented by the Justice card. He went in, he self-reflected, and he's come out with some new insight, just like how we are when we take some time to get close to the center of that wheel. We look in what keeps us steady and strong in our lives, and where do we want to move out from in the next phase. And so at this point, the hero is really ready to chance life in a new way, to take a new spin on whatever set him out on this journey. What would you like to add to this phase of the hero's journey?
Yeah, the image, the story that comes to mind is, you know, coming out of this, I always imagine the hermit in the woods. So you're coming out of the woods, you know, you've had your contemplation time and sort of, you know, you've found your own light through all the travels and travails that you've been through so far. And there's this sense of sort of like freedom and without expectation. And I think that sort of getting centered again lets us let go of all these giant expectations maybe that we'd had and just gone through, and that maybe we've been, you know, whipped around, you know, so much by the wheel of life that this, the hermit has kind of let us, you know, just chill for a little bit. And I see this, the image of the fool going back out of the forest, maybe into a clearing or where it's bright, and just being like, all right, I don't have any expectations. Go left, right, doesn't matter. Goes one direction, and it's as if, you know, when the top of the wheel wandering along, someone goes, hey, you know, are you thirsty? Here, have something to drink. And, you know, they go to the next place and they're like, hey, how you doing? And people just start, it's like they become the lucky winner of everything. Or they decide, hey, I'm going to go over here and do that, you know. And it's like, you know, going into the store and having somebody just be like, you know, you're the 10th customer, you get to shop for free. Or wouldn't that be nice for the shoe store? But so it's that just being lucky. But the cool part of it is the fool in this part of the journey in the Wheel of Fortune is without expectation. And I think there was a lot of expectation in each one of these cards, and they can, each one of these archetypes will show you that expectation that you might have and how those expectations can kind of clamp you down onto a specific idea. And that's not always a really great place to be, because you then become blinded to some of the other opportunities coming towards you. So I like the energy of this, sort of coming out of the forest, being free, not having expectations, and just sort of seeing what the world is able to give to you right now when you let go of those expectations.
Yeah, so that you can trust the universe enough to take a risk and try something new and have a new, yes, be spurred to a new aspect of the adventure.
So there's a couple of things that this reminded me of this week. I got a newsletter from one of my teachers, Carolyn Mace, and she talked about 7 extraordinary days of grace. And kind of in that, she talked about Renee Fleming, who's a really incredible opera singer. And Renee was teaching 4 sort of her students. And she had reflected with her students that, you know, as they're practicing and they're hitting those notes perfectly, that she told the story of having 7 days of excellence every year. And I know 7 seems like a small number, but just go with me here. So
I want more than 7.
Don't we all? Trust me, you'd be completely bored if every day was absolutely perfect and you got everything you want. That's the whole point of this wheel, you know? Things go up, they go down.
Everyone's got to have a chance, right?
Exactly.
Got to spread the luck around.
Don't get me started. So these 7 days of just excellence, or you might want to call it grace, right? And that the being aware of, you know, those days that you fall into it. I've had those days. I've actually probably had a couple of days in a row that were just like the wheel was turning. I continued to let go of my expectations and I continued to be surprised by it. So we don't need to limit it to 7, but I think that idea, it's a good number, that this top of the wheel sort of experience is that just being present with it. Don't try to control it. Don't try to run after something. Let all of the energy and everything that comes to you from it come into you.
Yeah, that is a huge lesson that can be learned by this card, is that you can't control or be in power over what's happening in this larger wheel that you're a part of and that we're all a part of. And when you can let go of that and go with the flow, go where this wheel is taking you, and whether it's taking you towards your success or whether you're having to just kind of back down a little bit and just let the tide go by, you know, that's an immensely important lesson of this card.
And by the same token, as it were, the bottom of that wheel, as we're looking at it, those days of shit where just everything goes wrong. It's those, you know, the Murphy's Law kind of days. And I think Murphy's Law is basically written, and if you don't know what it is, Google it, everything that can go wrong will go wrong idea. That kind of describes that bottom part of the wheel. But the same thing, I think, applies. Let go of your expectations. Because if you're in those Murphy's Law kind of days where everything just seems to be going wrong, you can build the expectation that everything will continue to go wrong. That's not true. I think the more you look for opportunities for things to go wrong, the more you will find them. And again, that's sort of that wheel of expectation. So just as if, you know, what goes around comes around, this too shall pass, that same idea can be applied. That if you let go of your expectations, whether things seem to be crappy or incredible, be with them and let them sort of move through. You have a much better experience of it. And you also don't get stuck on the idea that it will always be this way. You can be present to what you're, you know, some of the truths maybe that you need to have brought to you. Sometimes it's painful, in a butt-kicking kind of way, and sometimes it's joyous. And I think in our society we're way more familiar with the latter, or you know, the form. We don't learn joy as well as we do learn from pain. So this is, I think, a wheel can show us that there's both are really important.
Absolutely. And just true to this, a lot of these tarot cards, we've been exploring these opposites and how to hold these two opposites and live with the opposites. And while we're talking about some wise teachers we've come across and also the bottom of this wheel, I'd like to mention a wonderful book that really influenced me when I was studying psychology at Pacifica. Edward Edinger wrote a book called Ego and Archetype, and he has in this book a wheel that can show us the psychic life cycle, and it's essentially a model that can show us both what we were like when we were born in our original wholeness, but also how we are on a day-to-day basis when we have our own ego self identity, or an inflated sense of ourself. We feel like we can do anything, that we're doing great. And this is like a heroic perspective, and it leads us to take a risk. It takes us out into the world and we do something either noble or ignoble, perhaps. And we come across the inevitable in the world, which is, you know, at some point things aren't going to go completely our way. In fact, they might be flat out rejection. And this leads to a sense of wounding, a dismemberment of this amazing self that was off the top of the wheel. And we feel alienated from ourselves. And this brings us all the way down to that bottom of the wheel where we have to have a sort of process of repentance. And we feel we have to be humbled. And gradually we pick the pieces up. This is like a disintegration, right? We pick up these pieces that have shattered, and we have to put ourselves together anew. And we have to accept that we are human beings, that we're not perfect, that sometimes our ideas weren't the best, perhaps. And there's a great release that can happen when we accept that we're human, mm-hmm. and that we're part of this larger wheel, and our little tiny wheels are not going to measure up to the big wheel. So we reconnect with ourselves and we build ourselves back up. Things start going better again, and we eventually find ourselves at the top again, ready to heroically chance it again with some other project or idea. And thus the wheel spins. Mm.
Proud Mary keeps on turning. Just sorry, it just reminded me of that. There's a lot there. But I'm going to digress into something that I thought of when you were talking about that. And this is sort of this idea of paradigm shift. You know, at the beginning we're like, hey, it's 2012, there's so much happening. And there's an idea of a paradigm shift from this sort of like redemptive model where you always have to be redeemed, that somehow we are less than, and we're constantly trying to make up for how, you know, bad we are, to a different paradigm, which I think, you know, kind of is summed up with that wheel that you just talked about from Ego and Archetype. But it's a shift from this linear, you're bad, you need to make up for that and redeem yourself, to a paradigm of more about it being an evolution. And since that wheel just sort of keeps turning, it isn't just about like getting redeemed and starting over. It's really, I look at that as being about evolution in terms of when things go wrong or we make a mistake, it's really a larger model to say, oh, I'm learning here. And the only way you can quote unquote lose is if you don't find the lesson and the gift that you might not have gotten had everything gone perfectly, had you made the quote unquote perfect decisions. And the true connectedness that one can get to when they realize that they are human. And when they realize that our minds do a couple of things really, really well. They can bring ourselves up to make ourselves feel good, and then they can put other people down. And it's that sort of like, I can feel good about myself because I'm better than you.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Model versus one of really more sort of like evolution, and I can get connected to other people because I'm not perfect. Because guess what? I'm a schmo just like everybody else. And that's how I think we get to be vulnerable with each other. You can't be vulnerable if you walk in thinking, oh, I'm better than everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
And without vulnerability, we're not actually having a deep connection, because otherwise there's a sort of sense of status or like better or worse, or you know, trying to make yourself feel better by pushing someone down or vice versa. So
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because actually when I was taking another look at this card, I was getting actually the image of a spiral. I think that's an interesting question is to ask, how can I make the wheel work as a spiral, or that it's moving down a road, or that you know, we're not just learning the same lesson again and again, or maybe we are, but it is part of an evolution. I think that's a really beautiful way of looking at it.
I appreciate that paradigm myself, and I've been trying to work with that more and more, and seeing as maybe the spiral is being kind of small at the bottom, and it starts, the swoops outward as you go up, like a spring basically, but with the top of that spiral getting a little bit bigger. So sure, these archetypes and everything that we've talked about in terms of the cards is, yeah, we're going to learn these lessons over and over again, but hopefully working with them consciously, that space gets bigger and bigger. The lessons that we get from it are more expansive in our lives. And so we're less likely to go, oh my God, not this again. We go, oh, right, I've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes. And so there's a sense of recognition and a building of experience and understanding things as lessons versus that redemptive model, which really is more of like a Y and X axis of like, mm-hmm. you're either good or bad, where you go, oh, not me again. You know, where you do fall into the spiral of the victim archetype, which is one that I think is appropriate to talk about here just briefly, where you sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, but there is a chance to have that space be bigger and have it less being about being a victim or a survivor and have it really more about gaining experience and seeing this as being expansive.
Yeah, I could really see how the victim could come up here, mm-hmm. since we've acknowledged that this wheel is larger than us, that we can't control it. It's pretty easy to find that the victim voice of, oh, this wheel, it's crushing me, right?
Why me?
Why me? Absolutely. Everyone else seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's the victim archetype is something, in my practice, everybody has.
Right.
And for some people, it can be really, really difficult to own, especially if they're only seeing it in the unempowered, space. It can be an excellent reminder for us to don't be a victim where you're handing your power to everyone else. Or you're in some way, because victims like to complain, you get your power by feeding off of other people's sympathies as well. So as we kind of take a look at that bigger story, that bigger paradigm of seeing things as being more about evolution, and I mean this in the terms of the psychological sense of evolution, that the victim is included, and that there are going to be those times, and instead of just staying in that victim mode, you have the ability to grasp for the larger lesson and the gifts that I think are always in there as well. I had a chat with a client not too long ago, and I think we just ended up with a metaphor of suckland. And I think the bottom of this wheel is what we were calling suckland.
Hmm.
Just all these things are happening in our life. And it was like, and it was really just sort of victim energy kind of happening. And, in my practice, I try to point out the larger story, and I think she was getting annoyed. Like, ooh, what do you mean this is good? Like, how can I learn a lesson? And then we just wound up laughing, because I'm like, yeah, sometimes you do go to suckland. Just don't buy furniture. Don't stay there. Don't start putting a couch in suckland.
That's right.
Don't start getting a television and entertainment center, because you don't want to live there.
Yeah.
There are going to be times where you have to be honest that this sucks. Mm. It totally will. But again, it's like that expectation that you buy the furniture, you create the expectations that things will always suck, and you start buying furniture there. This is metaphor work. At the time, it was friggin' hilarious for the two of us, but
that's really interesting.
Just don't stay there and know that wheel is going to turn and that you can get stuck on it if your expectations are thus that everything will always sort of fall badly for you and it will always be that way. So here we are talking about the victim. We're going to talk about the gambler.
I know. Well, I'm so glad the victim presented him or herself, because it's absolutely relevant. But since you mentioned it, let's talk about the gambler. So I want to make clear for our listeners that, if this were to come up in a tarot reading or something, we wouldn't necessarily connect the Wheel of Fortune to the gambler necessarily, but I maybe in a shadow aspect, if you're getting addicted to chancing that wheel, mm-hmm. and continually risking in a way that becomes detrimental, then perhaps that's the Wheel of Fortune reversed or in a shadow aspect. But tell us about the gambler as an archetype that we're connecting in with fondness of game shows and, I don't know, card playing in general. We can be very meta here and talk about cards in general being a way to get messages from the universe,
yeah,
I guess.
Chance and all that. Yeah, and this is the first card that we have landed on that didn't have a direct path to a particular archetype.
So we're gambling right now.
So we're gambling right now.
This is
a little bit
total experimentation. We'll see what happens.
Well, the gambler in and of itself, as you all, I mean, it's a pretty easy one for everyone to recognize. Somebody who's a risk taker, somebody who follows their gut, their hunch, their intuition, and just goes with it. And they have the ability to hold that risk. Come, you know, big payout or loss, that is their ability. They have a sense of faith or a belief that that wheel of fortune is going to get spun and you might lose, but you know what? They're banking more on the win. And this week, actually, This American Life had a great episode all about gambling, and it was about card counting and the blackjack. So if you guys are out there, we recommend that podcast. So it really covers the sort of the gamut of what the gambler is about.
Do you think they could recommend our podcast? That's possible. Yeah. Really, I highly recommend This American Life podcast. If you haven't heard it, you should check it out.
And Ira Glass will recommend us.
But right.
See, again, you can't plan this stuff. This is the Wheel of Fortune. You know, we're kind of bringing it all out here. But to get back into our gambler friend, there is something very dramatic about the gambler. And somebody, I mean, it could be, you know, I've known children who have the gambler archetype. They're just risk takers. They'll try it. It's for the experience of doing it. They trust their intuitions. And getting back to that idea of expectations, they might have an expectation that they're going to win eventually, but in that moment, they let it go. I think that's sort of the superpower of the gambler, of just letting go of that expectation of like wanting to win, knowing you will eventually, but in that moment when you spin that roulette wheel or you, you know, buy that piece of investment property, you know, you just have this faith and this, you let go of an expectation. You're just like, here's what's going to happen. You know, like, I'm just going to be in this moment, which can be really, really great. The flip side of that is getting obsessive with that gambling. And my theory, and I can't tell you this is backed up in anything, but Julianne's theory and experience is that there is that sense, the momentary sense of freedom when you just let go, that can be addicting.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we don't really experience that much in our lives, because we're kind of taught to nail all the details down and get it all right and have it all down. But that moment when the gambler is just letting those metaphorical dice go, that's kind of that you're being in the present moment.
Yeah,
you're just
totally
there.
Mm-hmm.
In the shadow, you get addicted to making these dangerous risks. It can be, you know, with your own money, literally in gambling, or just not caring about the consequences after something's happened and completely letting go of their sort of groundedness in how their behavior affects them and their families. And again, mm-hmm. that podcast about Blackjack, it's called For This American Life. Just, it's a good one to listen to if you want to know more about the gambler archetype in people.
Mm-hmm.
The neurobiology of it, everything. It really has a lot to do with how we can habituate something into our minds and into our brains that says, you know, I'll win again, I'll win again, I'll win again. So taking that into consideration, sort of that balance of up and down.
I had a synchronistic dinner with a friend of mine who definitely consciously acknowledges the gambler archetype within himself, and he spoke about this addictive quality and a habit of identifying the wins or losses with, you know, how he's doing, and he described it as getting one up, getting something more than what he deserves, or mm-hmm. or feeling he deserves more, and being able to get that through the experience of gambling and feeling really quite being powerful when you win. It's just like a godlike feeling when you win, and that can be very, very addictive. Of course, the flip side of that is what happens when you lose. You feel really, really, really
yeah.
awful, because you can never win enough, but you can always go down to zero.
Yeah.
And that's why my mother always said, if you go into a casino and you play one of those slot machines and you lose, consider it the best gift you will ever be given. Because winning starts the addiction.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not, honestly, I grew up in a gambling town. I'm not much of a gambler myself. I just joked to a friend of mine. I was like, he's like, you don't like to gamble. I'm like, no, it would be more fun for me to take that money and throw it at the machine to see if I can hit it and bounce it off the side and then pick the money up again than it would for me to actually like put the coins in. But in terms of this stage that we're at, this expansive, to kind of bring it back to the wheel, just having that, knowing that this idea of the Wheel of Fortune, this thing's, you know, what goes around comes around, the fact that there are going to be periods of sudden events and unpredictability and cycles, having awareness of that is a part of life, and that whether you're stuck on the upside or the downside, that things will always keep moving. The only thing that I think can keep us sort of like stuck in misery is our own sort of ideas about that. The fact that something went wrong and we attach a bunch of stories to it, that can kind of keep us in that miserable state. And the same thing for the joyous things. We start creating a bunch of stories around why we're so joyful. Those stories don't always help us. Mm-hmm. Knowing, you know, if we stay with them and we insist that that always be our new reality, and that we kind of narrow it down to it's only this or this. So this is a balanced card. It's the one and the zero. So we have...
Mm-hmm. That's right. We have a masculine number, the one standing right next to the zero, which is mm-hmm. a feminine number. Great. So let's talk about films. So essentially in any film, you can see the Wheel of Fortune at work, right? You've got your main character, your hero, who chances, takes a risk perhaps, and... watching any film, that hero will be humbled in some way or another and will hit the bottom of that wheel and have to build themselves back up again to create a new identity or to start a relationship or whatever it takes. But we have a couple that we've thought of specifically here.
Sure. They have a lot of gambling sort of themes to them. Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks, is it? Yes. That's a great movie to see, just the gambler archetype, this risk taking. Also the puer eternus, which is the eternal child archetype, because he's really just all about freedom and movement. And he himself, when you watch this film, I think it's a well-made film too. It's entertaining, mm-hmm. but it is a perfect sort of example of the moving of the Wheel of Fortune and how he, in to the detriment of other people, notably in, you know, in his life, and he really learned this sort of ideas from his father, but just that continuous wheel and how he just keeps going. He's mm-hmm. letting go of expectations, and it's about a check forger, or he just impersonates all these people and
he's
gets
a doctor,
away with it.
He becomes an
airline pilot.
Airline pilot. Like, how did he pull those ones out? I can't even see the sight of blood without wanting to faint. So
exactly.
I don't know how he did that one.
So, I mean, he's a shapeshifter. There's a lot of other archetypes, obviously, in this film, but that's a fun one to look at in mm-hmm. terms of the Wheel of Fortune. And then the Ocean's 11 series, Ocean's 11, 12, 13, however many they're up to. I personally think these films are immensely fun. They're kind of big ticket films, but the cast is great. You've got George Clooney, you've got Matt Damon, Brad Pitt. Oh my God, this is so many incredible, fun actors. And they're a romp. They are about that sort of spinning of the wheel in one, you know, they're always about a caper. You know, that's the thief archetype, but it's this sense of camaraderie, and that when the Wheel of Fortune turns and they're all up, they all get the payoff. And when the Wheel of Fortune sort of turns and they're underneath, they're all in it together too. So I think I like that idea of that sense of community and loyalty that all these characters have with each other. So those are good examples of how everything can kind of work, how we're never on this wheel alone. We always have other people sort of around with us, and we can connect to people. And no one would ever want to watch a film if everything went completely right, nothing went wrong, and no one was challenged.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Conflict is essential.
Not even a Care Bears film, not even children's films. There's always got to be a little bit of grit.
The stakes are high.
Yeah. So cool. That was fun. What else can we do that's unpredictable?
Oh,
see,
my
I just
God.
Ruined it by saying it, but oh well.
Oh, I know.
There's some stuff happening pretty soon though, so
yeah, so speaking of the unpredictable and the trickstery element in life that always throws in a added wrench into your wheel at times, come celebrate the Trickster at the Trickster Salon, which is a wonderful thing that I attend monthly. It's a community art event where there's paintings, there's performances, there's walk-arounds. I'm often doing some sort of walk-around thing. I've been known to do tarot readings at times at these events. But it's this June 21st at 9 p.m. at Mission Control. You can find out more by going to TricksterEvents.com. And the theme for this month, mentioning it because I feel like it's linked to our Wheel of Fortune theme, is What's Behind Door Number 7? So it's a very cheesy game show, take a risk, chance your luck sort of theme. I think it should be a lot of fun.
And that's for you people in the Bay Area, so that would be in San Francisco. Our apologies to tease you with such cool events if you are living elsewhere. And I know we do have podcast subscribers from around the world. So, but if you're in the Bay Area, June 21st, 9 p.m., check out TricksterEvents.com. That should be a lot of fun. I hope to make it there as well. And that's also on the winter summer solstice that night as well.
Yeah, that's right. So wherever you are, enjoy your summer solstice. And we are here in San Francisco. You know, that's two excuses to come out to San Francisco and come get a reading or an archetypal session with Julianne. I think that would be really, really cool. We're offering something special.
We are taking a little bit of a risk here.
Yeah.
Both Sundara and I have agreed that all of our podcast listeners, until, well, let's just say the end of the year. Let's do the end of the year. With the help. So we are both offering, should you want to work with us and check out what we do, we will offer you 20% off your first scheduled session with us. So listen at the end of this podcast and you'll get our information. And if you want to take a risk and see how it is to work with us, what kind of insights and help you can get in your life, contact us and your first session, you get 20% off. How's them apples?
That sounds really good. I think I might just have to take advantage of it myself. Right. But yeah, I think that's an added incentive for anyone out there. Because I talk to a lot of people and they're afraid to do a tarot. They're like, well, what's going to come up? You know, what if the death card comes up? So that's a whole
your stuff's
other...
not like that at all. It's
really not like that. It's a really just wonderful way to draw out your own wisdom, to clarify a specific question in your life. And for you as well.
It's not superstitious, your work at all. And again, that's when we talked about at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm really aware of and beware of superstition. I think calling that knowledge and that wisdom back to yourself is what it's about. And the second you start sticking on these other things on the outside, you're really going to lose your center and your equilibrium, and you're going to start doubting things. So superstition, schmooperstition is what I have to say.
That's right.
So don't be afraid. So we are now ending our last podcast until, we believe, September. We're going on sabbatical, and we have one more little baby podcast for you that we're going to put out in a couple weeks, but we will see you all again, see you, hear you, be with you in September. So we'll miss all y'all, but hang in there. We got more coming later in the summer.
That's right. And if you miss us, please let us know. We'd love to hear. We're halfway through the deck now, essentially. Yeah. So, or halfway through the major arcana. So, if you have thoughts, comments, questions, suggestions for where we're going with this and want to hear more about movies, or if you want to hear more myths, or if you want to hear more archetypey stuff, whatever it is, more gambling, I don't know.
Let us know.
Let us know, and we'd love to hear about it.
atpodcast@archetypist.com. All right. Love y'all. Have a great summer. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Archetypal Tarot Podcast. For more information on Sundara's work, please visit her website, tarotdreamstone.com. For more information on archetype consulting, visit archetypist.com. That's archetypist.com. Thanks for listening.